conversation between a priest and a devotee. And the devotee asked the priest, that was during the oblation of fire, he asked the priest, who knows what, where is the world, set apart? Who knows of the earth, of the heaven, and the air in between? Who knows the birthplace of the mighty Surya? I ask thee, what is the, where is the world set apart, and of the earth outer limits? Now, the priest answers, I know the world
Vedahamedam purusham mahantam
about us. I know of the earth, of the heaven, and the air in between. I know the price of the birth of the mighty Surya. This altar is the earth outer limits. The sacrifice, that the sacrifice bears, is the world center. Now, what I want to know is, why did he use the sacrifice of Adas as the world center? And yourself, in a commentary on the Gita the other day, talking about Nichikita and Yama, Yama said to Nichikita, I was the first one talking about the pyre. I was the first one to perform that sacrifice. Why did you use that word sacrifice as well?
Sacrifice is a nice word. Unfortunately, it has got into misuse by someone killing somebody else, something else. Sacrifice really, really, really means...
Why not the word consecration?
Same thing.
No, it's not.
Same. Now, the word... Consecration,
it means that you enjoy doing something.
Wait.
To whom you belong.
No. Consecration and sacrifice, both to an extent mean the same thing. For instance, you take an object and consecrate it, which means the object is made sacred. Correct? There is an object, and when it is consecrated, that object is made sacred. Sacrifice is making sacred without limiting the consecration only to an object. You cannot say, I consecrate myself. You do not say. I don't know if you cannot. But
no,
you
consecrate usually the elements.
Something else.
Yeah.
Something else.
In Christian religion, the body and blood of Christ is consecrated as the element.
The bread and wine.
Right.
The bread and wine are consecrated. Now, therefore, here in this concept of sacrifice, everything can be sacrificed. Everything can be made sacred, including yourself.
But you already are. You already sacrificed.
That's true. That is true. But unfortunately, you do not know. And therefore, there is need for sacrifice. And that is why, again, the Veda says, Yajna vai Vishnu. Yajna itself is God. And in the Bhagavad Gita also, you have the same statement. Adhyajnyoha me vatra dehe dehe vrtambara. In all bodies, I am the spirit of sacrifice. I am the sacrifice in all bodies. So that when you do something in a spirit of sacrifice, you are purifying yourself, you are making yourself sacred.
In your attitude to Laya Yoga, when the elements are reintegrated within the Godhead.
That is Laya.
Do you mean that is also a sacrifice?
You may say so. Anything that is made sacred is sacrifice. When a thing is made sacred, it is sacrifice.
So you don't look at it from a metaphysical point of view?
No, no.
Where the elements are the expression of a certain continuum of that reality, but in that reintegration, it is a sacrifice that you're doing.
Yes, you may say so. You may say so, yes. When that element is offered to the divine,
it means that we have something to sacrifice to God.
Yes, you are. Oh, a lot.
But we already are.
The main thing being the foolishness.
Yeah, but this, you cannot sacrifice illusion.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Illusion doesn't exist.
Wait a moment. That is the point. That is what I wanted to say. As a matter of fact, you sacrifice really only your foolishness. You sacrifice your egoism. You sacrifice your sense of possession. Mindness. I-ness and mindness. And you sacrifice your ego sense, which doesn't exist. But since we have come to regard these as realities, they are sacrificed. They are made sacred. You look at on the wall and see a shadow, and you think it is there. It is something. A shadow is not a substance. But looking at it, you think it is something. It is an existence. It is a substance. And when you want to look at it thoroughly, clearly, you shine a light on it, flash a light on it. And at that moment, the shadow becomes enlightened. In the same way, when you inquire into the nature of the self, and you come to the ego sense, what is it? I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it is, but I think it is. I can't say anything about it, but I still feel that it is something. So Lord, take my ego sense. I offer it as sacrifice unto you. And at that moment, the ego sense is sacrificed, which means the illusion is made sacred. Watch very carefully. There is another beautiful statement in another Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad. Tadevanu tat srishtva tadevanu pravishat. God created all things. Having created all these things, he entered into them. There's a big list. But there's one item in that list which is extremely interesting. Satyancha anirdancha. He entered into truth. He entered into that which is false. He entered into that which is real. He entered into that which is unreal. Satyam abhavat. Because he entered into what is true, and because he entered into what is not true, satyancha anirdancha satyam abhavat. Truth and falsehood became truth. This is like simple mathematics. I read a definition given by one great, the greatest mathematician of the century, Bertrand Russell. Mathematics is a science which deals with something which may not exist, which you know that you can never prove. What is zero? Can you imagine what zero is? And when you subtract one number from another number, that is, let's say, what is 5 minus 15? There is an answer to that. Minus 10. But what is minus 10? Pardon? you wouldn't tell that to your banker, sir. Your banker has got plus 10 against your name. The banker has plus 10 in your name. He has given out $10. It's a plus quantity in his eyes. So, can you imagine a thing called minus 10? It is there in mathematics. But here, he says, that which is truth and that which is falsehood both become truth because God has entered into all this. Which means that what is called untrue, what is illusion, is not illusion. It's an overdraft. Illusion is nothing but an overdraft. We have a sense of illusion, all right, keep that sense with you. But you examine it, the content of that illusion is consciousness. Wait. Please digest this. You didn't hear the last word. The content of illusion is consciousness. And therefore, illusion is illusory.
But in the story you guide us the other day in that yama, when you said, I was the first one to perform that sacrifice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What did God have to give up?
Hmm?
Yama was a god. Yama is a god.
Yama, no. That is not made very clear. No, sir. That is not made very clear. He says, I performed the sacrifice first, and therefore I became Yama.
I was not under that impression when you said that.
Probably I didn't make it clear. Mm-hmm. By virtue of my having performed the sacrifice, I became Yama. It is not clear whether the sacrifice was performed when he was a god already, or whether it was done before. But even if you argue that it was done when he had been promoted a god in heaven, even then, the position of Yama is something unique. And so, it is even possible that he would have performed the sacrifice after he was elevated to heaven. It's also possible. But the essence is that it is the spirit of sacrifice. Or the recognition of this sacred in everything. To sacrifice means only this: to recognize the sacredness or sanctity of every object. It's a very beautiful thing. And I believe, according to some Kabbalists, that when they sacrifice goats and fowl and other animals and so on, they are really making those animals sacred and liberating them, freeing them.
So it is also in the ritual, in the Kali ritual, it is the same thing.
You are freeing that soul and promoting its evolution. So next time you eat even a cabbage, please remember that. Yes, I believe he used to say that especially when a religious man, rabbi, eats something, he liberates the soul, promotes it. So it's all right, it's good.
The difference between your Turks, rabbi, and Kabbalist. There is great difference.
Quite right. No, it must be Kabbalistic rabbi. The idea is that to raise the consciousness to that level, to raise your consciousness to that level, that you recognize the sanctity in all things. That is what is called sacrifice, not just cutting somebody's throat. How to sacrifice the ego? By then enlightening it, by throwing some light on it. What is the ego? What is a shadow? Shadow is something which is dark, and I don't know what it is, I don't know whether it is there or not. I'm not even sure that it is there. I can see 5 fingers, but I can't take them out of the wall. Whereas if there is a painting or something like that, or there's a wire, I can pull it out. And here is something which I can see, but I cannot handle. And therefore I want to see it more clearly. Even so, the ego is felt to be existent, to be there. You feel, I am there, I am here, I am sitting here. And yet this I am is not tangible. You are unable to play with it. You cannot take it and suspend it for a little while. So, in order to know what it is more clearly, you turn the light of awareness upon it by inquiry. Inquiry not in the sense of analysis and so on, but directly looking at it. What is it? What is this ego sense? What is this I am? In order to look at this shadow, you bring a flashlight and press it. When you press it, what happens? There is a temptation to say that the shadow has gone. It didn't go. I was watching, it did not go. You can use the word disappeared. What do you mean disappeared? What was it and where did it go? Now my answer is, the shadow became enlightened. The shadow became light. So, in the same way, if while looking at this ego sense, looking for this ego sense, looking at this ego sense, at the source of that ego sense, that's precisely what the Veda says. Look for the source of this world, look for the source of this ego. So, as you are looking intently at the source of this ego sense, suddenly, the light of awareness flows into it. The ego sense, to begin with, was neither light nor darkness. It is like the shadow. You are able to see, but it is dark. So, when the light of awareness is poured into this ego sense, That which originally said in answer to the question, what is the ego sense? I don't know. I don't know means I am ignorant of it. I am ignorant of this ego sense. Now, the light of awareness is poured into it. You cannot say, I don't know. And that I don't know disappears. With that, the ego sense also disappears. It does not disappear, it gets enlightened. It becomes pure awareness. There was awareness behind it, there was awareness in front of it, and this stood as a silly little wall of made of a shadow. And when the light of awareness is poured into it, it became enlightened, and therefore there was light here, there is light there, light everywhere. There is enlightenment. So easy. And so simple.
So is the mantra the sort of focus? Because otherwise, where does it reside? You can't...
Exactly.
Find it anywhere.
No, you can find it through other things. You can find it through the feeling of pain. You can find it through the feeling of pleasure. The orthodox ascetics in all religions who inflicted pain upon themselves, they also took the same path. That which feels the pain is the ego sense again. Because, you see, their contention was that repeating a mantra you may become dull and you go to sleep. But supposing somebody keeps pushing a safety pin or a nice little pin into your thigh all the time, then you won't go to sleep. You're very much awake. So, by becoming aware of the pain, you become aware of the source of the pain, you become aware of the source of the ego. Same. And that is the famous asceticism. But what happened even there, they got used to the pain. They didn't feel the pain anymore. And they went to sleep. Or it became exhibitionism, which means you are no longer looking for the source of the pain and therefore the source of the ego. But you are feeding the ego. Oh, look what I can do. Right? It's gone. Then the others, unfortunately, they are called tantrics. They are not. This is not the essence of tantric philosophy. And of course, once you pursue them, they say, no, not these tantrics. There were other tantrics, known as left-handed, or Vamachara tantrics. I must have mentioned this to you. It's interesting that in the Orient, this cult is called Vamachara. Vama means left hand. And in Latin, the left hand is called Sinistra.
That is another.
But Vamachara Latin it is called Sinistra. This left hand is Sinistra. And sinister in English means something sinister. So, how this coincidence came about is interesting to analyze. So they said, these people are Vamacharis. They said, well, why do you want to torture yourself? Enjoy yourself. Have a glass of wine. First, eat meat to your heart's content. But while you are eating and enjoying, inquire. Look within and see where is this pleasure coming from? Who is experiencing this pleasure? I. Who am I? Go on. Drink. Same thing. Go on. But, of course, in the Mahanirvana Tantra, there is a caution that this path is good only for the veeras, heroes. You can do all this and still remain centered. So, it is not only the mantra, but all experiences inevitably point to the presence of the ego sense, because it is the ego that talks now. It is the ego that hears and nods the head. So, it's possible for us, even now, to be tracing the root of the ego. Possible. Only if you are interested.
If you're doing it through that sort of, through painful experiences or something, it's sort of like you're aware of it, like in I don't know what's aware of it and what's it, but there's a sort of awareness of that sort of arising. But
pain, it's very difficult. Not easy. While you are experiencing pain, it is not always easy to do that.
Now say you've been hurt by somebody or you've been insulted.
Even then, it needs a certain maturity, first, to begin with. It needs a certain maturity to be able to turn within at that time. Whether it is a question of pain or pleasure or, you know, psychological hurt or sorrow, it needs a certain inner maturity. Number one, it needs a tremendous amount of inner awakening. I want to find this. Otherwise you won't. If somebody insults you, the first thing is to pick up something and hit him.
And do you have to try and become aware of it at that moment?
Because sure, sure. Otherwise it is not there.
Afterwards you think,
It's not. It is not the same.
You can't find it.
Therefore you can't find it. Yeah. It is not the same. Because afterwards when you sit down and think about it, you are looking not at the hurt, but at the thought of the hurt. Mm. At the memory, which is not the same.
Is that inquiry necessarily going to arrest the reaction?
May or may not. It should at least arrest the gross and silly form of reaction. If it also involves physical hurt, physical pain, the body will do its own thing. It's not a question of reaction, it will do its own thing. But if it is a purely psychological affair, then your gross reaction will be suspended.
What's the purpose of the ego?
What is the purpose of the ego? There was a very beautiful expression which Lakshmi read a couple of days ago in the Yoga Vasishtha. What was it? I am standing on the shoulders of the barren woman's grandson. I am standing on the shoulders of a barren woman's grandson. Now, the purpose of bringing this is, we have not determined whether the ego is there or not. But the moment we assume that the ego has a purpose, we have created it. And we have confirmed its existence. And we keep reaffirming it. Yes, it is there, it is there, it is there. All that we can say, first of all, is that it seems to exist. And it seems to exist when there is no awareness concerning its reality. The shadow seems to exist on the wall. I cannot say it exists because I cannot pick it up. But it seems to exist. It seems to exist as long as I do not see it clearly. In order to see it clearly, I must flash a light on it. So, during the period of our unawareness or ignorance, the ego seems to exist as an entity. And in that state of ignorance, we reaffirm its existence, we are convinced of its existence, we reaffirm its existence, and then create a purpose for it. Why has the ego sense been created? Then there is the possibility of finding an excuse for its existence, and that is that it coordinates the sense functions, that it acts as a pivot for the functioning of the psychological instrument. It is the very hub of what is known as the personality and all that. But is it, does it really and truly exist? Because if it does really and truly exist as an individual, if it does really and truly exist as an independent thing, if it does have an independent self-existence, then it cannot go away, it cannot be destroyed. Which means, forever and ever and ever and ever, you will be you, I will be I, and we will be fighting each other. Whereas, suddenly we realize that even during our present daily life, there are times when this ego sense doesn't operate. Sleep. And yet things go on. And yet things go on. Life goes on. Yeah, yeah, but who does it, who functions during that period?
In the Upanishad, he said that you only wake up after sleep because of the vasanas within.
Quite right.
And then only,
thank you, sir.
Then you wake up.
Which means that even the vasanas can function without the ego. This is quite simple. That during sleep, the ego sense is suspended. When in a state of coma, the ego sense is suspended again. So, why is...
Pardon? What about dreams during sleep?
No. We are not talking about dreams. Dream and waking state are more or less the same. We dismiss that. Sleep means sleep. And so, suddenly we realize that if the ego has an independent self-existence, it must exist at all times. There are times when it doesn't exist. Which means it is something ununderstood. It is something ununderstood. It is something assumed to exist. Independent of the totality.
Of the totality.
Mm. Independent in itself. That's the idea.
Well, I mean, the body, of course, is not independent either.
Nothing is independent.
Does the ego think it's independent?
Right. That's the point. That's the whole fun. Are you Susan Day or something else? Ah, right.
You've got to think better, I'll be that.
Yeah, right. Ah, that's it. I am. And I am very different from you. I am very different from everybody else. I am an independent personality. And this plagues our consciousness throughout the time, throughout the day, throughout the night, except for sleep. And so we come to a clear understanding of these two factors. One, that there are periods when the ego sense doesn't exist. Let's not even use the word suspended. When the ego sense doesn't exist, which means it is not a continuous existence. If there are periods when it doesn't exist and periods when it exists, we have no right to say that it is an independent self-existence. One of these things is false. If it exists sometime and if it doesn't exist some other time, its existence or non-existence is dependent upon where you are looking. If you are looking there, it doesn't exist. If you are looking here, it exists. And therefore, philosophically, it is not accepted as existence. That's number one. And number two, that when it does exist, it causes all sorts of problems. Or, when it is assumed to exist, it causes endless problems. With the help of these two, we begin to investigate and inquire into the reality of this ego sense. What exactly is it? That is, I am now examining the truth concerning the shadow. What exactly is it? Is it the wall? Is it like the wall? Is it like my hand? Has that got a purpose? But what exactly is it? Before even assuming that it has a purpose and then discovering that it has a purpose, this is the purpose, I want to know what exactly is it. I can't pick it up. I can't wipe it clean. Phew, crazy. And then I ask him, sir, how does one see? With what one does one see? There's some defect in my eye. He says, you know, Swami, one's eyesight must be good, and then even if the eyesight is good, if there is no light, you cannot see. Ah, I see, yeah, right, correct. There is no light there. So I bring a flashlight and flash it upon it. And that thing gets enlightened. Or if you again observe this phenomenon of the shadow on the wall, when you press the light, you see the only thing that was real here, where the shadow was, you now see the wall, which was all the time the reality. What am I seeing there? I am seeing the wall. What about the shadow? The shadow appears to be. And the shadow will continue to appear to be as long as I don't look at it more profoundly with the use of a flashlight. In the same way, when I look at this ego sense, which has been assumed to exist, and which seems to exist as long as it is assumed to exist.
Well, then is it available to develop insight?
Naturally, maybe. And so, when this insight is developed, and This insight looks directly at the source of these ego sins. It sees not the ego sins, but in its place it sees consciousness. In its place it sees God. Then suddenly you realize, my God, why didn't I realize it before? It was the wall all the time. Shadow or no shadow. It was God all the time. Here, there, everywhere. And it was God Himself who was saying, I am, of course I am. Who says I am not? See? It was God who was saying, I am. It was God who was sitting and talking. Oh, good grief. And God was sitting there and looking, nodding. All that becomes different.
Yes, but on this level, right? Absolutely physical. I know it can all become different. But the actual law, this is what I'm interested in, the law of the physical level right now is that there's going to be a shadow. You can keep doing
sure.
There's always going to be one, will you?
Sure.
So it has to be a law of the mental level, the psychological.
Exactly.
Level. It's absolute law.
Thank you, my dear. And therefore they say, as long as there is this physical level consciousness, even though you might already have reached that point of enlightenment, where you realize that there is no self-existence, independent self-existence called the ego. You have reached that point where you have realized that there is no independent self-existence which is called the self. Even then, when a fruit is placed in front of you, pick it up and put it into that mouth. And if you are traveling to India, and at the airport somebody asks you, what's your name? Say Susan Day. Not enlightenment. But I don't know if this is something very beautiful. Do you or do you not know that there is absolutely nothing blue in the sky? There is something blue here. The ceiling is painted blue. Here the ceiling is painted blue, and you know that a lot of paint has gone into it, and there is a roof above. But when you look at the sky, you know that there is nothing blue in it? You don't know?
I'm told that there's one.
Okay, no. Let's.
Well, I still think there is one. I've been looking at it a long time.
People have gone through it, and you know.
All right.
They have gone to the moon, they have gone, sent a rocket to Mars and Venus and all that. Nothing. It hasn't bumped into any blue thing. And so, but when you look at the sky, don't you still see something blue, as you say? And even in sort of moments of reverie, you even think there is something marvelously blue standing up there. There is no harm in it. But you are not fooled. You are not fooled into thinking that this is a sort of funny little glass dome, and when somebody fires a rocket, oh my God, he is going to crack it. And the whole of the earth is going to be, you know, exposed. Such fear you don't have, because you know the reality and you know the appearance. You have seen some rubber snakes which crawl and do everything that a snake does. If you did not know what it was, that it was rubber, you get frightened. But once you have found out it was rubber, you still see that it is almost absolutely like a snake and behaves like a snake, but you are not frightened. You enjoy it. So, whereas the fool is bound by the ego, tormented by the ego, the person who is enlightened sees the same thing, even experiences the arising of the ego, but is not fooled by it. It doesn't have that stark reality that it had for the fool. And therefore you play with it. You still keep it, play with it. And when you don't want it, hang it on the peg.